All right, I'll say good morning. So today's daf is Mem Vav. Today's daf is 46. We're picking up on Mem Hey Amud Beis, 45b, and we're picking up four lines up from the bottom. V'savar Rabbi Yehuda. V'savar Rabbi Yehuda lelakos lokem mikol makom. Now, boss, remember in yesterday's daf, we spoke about Machol Kassin Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon about under what circumstances there are malchus, and what circumstances does one pay the fine for Moti Shemra. So the Marwat is just that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you get malchus no matter what, meaning whether there was Baal or lo Baal, whether there was relations or not. So the Gemara says, is that true that Rabbi Yehuda holds that you get malchus no matter what? Va'atanya, we learned. Rabbi Yehuda says, Baal loke, lo Baal in a loke. Yet the Braisa says that Rabbi Yehuda holds that Rabbi Yehuda, in the only case of Moti Shemra, where the husband, where the Baal will get malchus, is if he had relations with his wife. But if there were no relations, so he doesn't get malchus. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, no. Loke makas mardus midirabanan. What that means is, even in a situation where the Moti Shemra husband would not be liable to malchus, to lashes mid the oraisa, we still give him malchus mardus, which Rabbi Yehuda means rabbinic lashes. So there is this concept, we've spoken about this a number of times, that in circumstances, for whatever reason, where you can't administer the biblical punishment, Chazal, the Beis Din, always has the ability to administer rabbinic lashes. Top of Memvav. Rabbi Papa says, no, my Baal Loke. What does it mean when it says that if he has relations with his wife, this is the Moti Shemra Rabbi Yehuda, and then claims that she wasn't the Basula, that he gets Malkus? My Baal Loke Diktani Hasam, Mamon. Loke in this context doesn't mean lashes. Loke, in fact, means money. He has to pay. The kari le la mamon malchus, but do we ever call an obligation to pay malchus? In fact, we do. V'hatanan, we learned. V'ha'omer chatzi arko alai. Rabbi says, interesting case. A person says, half of my erech is on me. Then Rabbi says, remember, there's a concept of an erech vow. So remember again, so an erech vow means a person pledges to give their value. Now these are, an erech vow actually is an objective amount, depending on gender and depending on age. So a person goes ahead and pledges their erech, their value, to the Beis HaMikdash. So omer chetzi erki alai, if someone says, I pledge half of my value. So let's say my value is 500 selah, and so I go and I pledge half of my value, 250 selah, to the Beis HaMikdash. What's that halacha? No sein chetziarko. Okay, so I have to pay half of my value to the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, loke, v'no sein erech shalin. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, you're loke, and Rabbi Yossi, that sounds like you get malchus, and you have to pay your full value. Loke, am I? Why would you get malchus for making a neder, an erech vow, for half of your erech? Amra Papa, no. Loke be'erech shalim. What it means is, Rabosai, so loke literally means he gets lashed or he's stricken, right? So what does it mean? It means he's lashed with the whole value. In other words, that it doesn't mean he gets malchus. It means it's imposed upon him the entire value. So you see what? So first of all, what you see over here is that loke, that lashon, is used in a monetary sense, that a person can, so meaning when it says a person can get, you know, loke with mamon, it means that ultimately they're stricken with the obligation to go ahead and pay the entire value. Now, my time, so first of all, the emergency, why is that, by the way? Why is that that if I make a vow saying that I pledge half of my erech, half of my value, that I get hit over the head and I have to pay the whole value? So my time, gezeira chatziarko, atu erech chetzio. Well, I said it's exera that we're concerned that if we only let you pay half, in the case of where a person says half of my value, a person may come to confuse that with the case of where a person makes a neder for a value of their half. So as I said, there's a chilek between this lashon of I'm making a neder for half of my value versus a value of my half. The erech chazio, because if a person makes, let's say I want to make a neder for the value of the half of my body, the erech chazio havile ever shanashama tuluyibo. But say the halacha is like this: if a person says, just to give you a simple case, a person says I want to give the erech of my head. So what's the halacha? The halacha is they have to give the erech of their entire body. Why? Because if you go ahead and you make an erech vow with what we call an Eiver Shanashama Taluyabo, something that you need in order to live, then Lamaisa, what? You have to give your entire value. As opposed to, let's say, if I say, I want to give the value of my arm. So technically, a person can live without an arm. Technically, there is a way to assess what the value of an arm is. But if it's called an Eiver Shanashama Taluyabo, so a part of the body in which the soul is dependent, life is dependent, you must give the entire value. Therefore, Abba say, the Gemara is afraid of like this. If a person says, I pledge the erech value of half of my body, so what is the halacha in such a case like that? So if you pledge, you can't live without half of your body. Therefore, lemaisa, what is the halacha? The halacha is you have to pay the entire amount. So what we're concerned about over here is that, but yet, if you say, I want to give half of my erech, technically speaking, such a neder like that would work. Because what that saying is, I know my whole value, I want to give half of that amount. So therefore, again, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that in a case where you say, I want to give half of my value, we make you pay the whole value, lest you confuse that with the case of where a person says, I want to give the value of my half. But I will say, so remember, we're not learning about Nedarim right now. For our purposes, what's important about this Gemara is what? That you see that the Lashon of Loke is used in conjunction with an obligation to pay. Ten Rabbanon. Va'anshu oso, zemamo. So we'll say, now we're going to go through and dissect the pasuk of Motzi Shemer. So remember, again, this is talking about the man who went ahead and claimed that his wife was not a basula, and then it turns out that he was lying. So the Gemara says, va'anshu oso, they punish him. Zemamo, that refers to money. He has to pay money. V'yisru, they go ahead and they afflict him. Zemalkus, this refers to Malkus. Bishlam va'anshu zemamo, I understand why the word va'anshu refers to monetary compensation. Dichsiv, va'anshu oso mehekesef, v'nosnu la'aviyanara, because the pasuk says quite explicitly, they will punish him by making him pay 100 silver pieces and give it to the father of the girl. Ella v'yisru zemalkus minalam. But how do we know that word v'yisru refers to Malkus? Am Rabbi Avo, lamanu yisru, yisru mi yisru. So I will say, so listen to this. This is by Ben Sorer Umora. So in the case of Ben Sorer, the rebellious son, so the Torah says, Einenu shemeh v'kol aviv v'kol imo, v'yisru oso, v'lo yishma aleihem. So right, so it says yisru over there. Now I will say, now we don't know what yisru in that context necessarily means either. But here's what we do know. U'miben, v'yisru miben, u'ben mibin. But I will say, listen to this. Right after the word v'yisru, or I should say, in the pasuk of the word v'yisru, we have the pasuk ben. Kiyiye li'ish ben sorer umora. Now, I will say that word ben, beis nun, also applies in another context. V'haya im bin hakos harasha. And it will be if the evil person is liable to lashes. So I will say, see what's happening over here? Similar to the drasha we had yesterday. We have a connection of yisru yisru. So yisru connects Motzi Shemra to ben sorer umora. In ben sorer umora, the same pasuk of yisru also has the word ben, beis nun. And that same word beis nun is found where? In the pasuk by Malkus. From there we learn out that yisru ultimately again means Malkus. Azhara lemotzi shemra minalon. But where is the warning for Moshe Rabbeinu? Now this is an interesting idea in general. That in the Torah, the way that the legal system of the Torah works is the following. For every single prohibition, you need two things. You need an azhara and you need an onesh. You need a specific pasuk that tells you that something is aser. No mention of the parashah, but just that the act is aser. And then you need another pasuk to teach you about what the punishment for the particular wrongful act is. So the Gemara asks, where is the azhara for Motzi Shemra? From where do we know that it is prohibited for a man to go ahead and lie about the virginity of his wife? Where do we know that? So Rabbi Lazar says, Milo Selech Rachel. Because the pasuk says, well, say what? Lo Selech Rachel, which we normally assume refers to what? Lashon Hara. You're not permitted to slander or speak badly by another person. Very simple. So a husband is not permitted to speak negatively or ill or untruthfully about his wife. Rabbi Nassim says, so that's Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Nassim says, you must guard yourself from every evil thing. And obviously the act of speaking ill about one's wife is an evil thing. So why doesn't Rabbi Elazar agree with Rabbi Nassan that you can learn it out from Vinishmarta Mikol Davera? Very simple. Hahumi Baile Lechidra Pinchas Ben Yoyer. Because Rabbi Elazar requires the pasak of Vinishmarta Mikol Davera, you shall guard yourself from every evil thing. He needs that for the Joshua Pinchas Ben Yoyer. What was the Joshua Pinchas Ben Yoyer? So the Gemara says, Vinishmarta Mikol Davera. What does it mean in the pasak? You shall guard yourself from every evil thing. Mikan Amra Pinchas Ben Yoyer. Ayahar Her Adam Bayom. V'yavo lidi tuma balayla. Pinchas Ben Yoyer says a person should not have impure or improper thoughts by day, because it could lead to a seminal emission at night. That's how Rabbi Elazar uses that particular pasuk. V'Rabbi Nassan, my time lo amar mehai. Why doesn't Rabbi Nassan agree with Rabbi Elazar that you learn it out from lo selech rachil ba'amecha? Do not be a gossip monger, a talebearer. Hahu asar lebezdin. Because Rabbi Nassan feels that lo selech rachil ba'amecha is in fact a warning to Bezdin. Shelo yehei rach lozeh. The kasha lazeh, that ultimately Beis Din should not be hard on one litigant and soft on another. And also it says, it's interesting, so Rashi points out over here, if you look at Rashi, he says, rach lazeh, v'rachil lashon rach li tihiyah. It's very interesting. So loseleich rachil means, do not be rach li, do not be soft on one litigant and hard on the other litigant. Therefore, I both say, both will agree. Both will agree that obviously there is an ashara, there is a warning for Motzi Shemra, but they will disagree as to what that particular warning is. Lo amar le'edim bo veheiduni. So let's listen to this. So the normal case, well, let's actually see. Let's say the husband did not hire the witnesses to come and to testify that his wife wasn't a basula, but the witnesses come on their own. Now, obviously, we'll say that everybody's lying over here. Witnesses are lying, husbands are lying. But the point is, the husband did not arrange for the witnesses to come. So what's the halacha? V'hein me'idin oso me'aleihem. They come to testify on their own volition. Hu ein aloke, v'ein ono se me'esloim. So the husband doesn't get malchus and does not have to pay the 100 silver pieces. He v'zomemeha makdim le'beis haskila. But she, the wife, and the zomemen witnesses, the witnesses are proved to be zomemen, go out to be stoned. When it says, he vizomea saka daitra, what are you talking about? That she and the witness are going out to be stoned? Ela ohi o zomameha makdim lebeis haskila. Rather, either she or the witnesses are going to be killed. In other words, we both say that if the witness, so this is a case here where the husband did not go out and hire the witnesses. So there are two possibilities. The witness is telling the truth. If the witnesses are telling the truth, then lemaisa what? She's executed. If the witnesses are lying, then assuming, let's say, they're disqualified by being edim zomamin, they receive reciprocal punishment and they are executed. But if it does turn out that they're lying, even if they're executed, he does not get the fine and the lashes. So the Gemara says, taima de lo amar lehu ha, ha amar lehu, so both say the reason why the husband is not held accountable in this case is because he did not order the witnesses to come. But had he ordered the witnesses to come, apparently again he would have been liable, even though he did not actually hire them. And this comes to the opinion of Rabbi Huda, the Sanya, Rabbi, we'll say first wide line, the Sanya, Rabbi Huda says, Eino chayiv, Ad she yiskar edim. Rabbi Huda holds that the husband is not chayiv for Motzi Shemra until what? Until he himself actually hires witnesses. My time with Rabbi Huda. So we'll say, why does Rabbi Huda hold? So we'll say, which is interesting. So what it's saying is, if I convince two guys to lie for me about my wife, then the mice say, again, I'm not chayiv. I actually have to pay them money in order to be chayiv for Motzi Shemra. So what's the pshat? My time with Rabbi Huda. On Rabbi Avo, Asya Sima Sima. We go ahead and we make a gzir shava of sima, ksiv hacha v'sam la alilos tivarim. It says over here by Motzi Shemra that he put upon her, or he extended about her, really he created about her alilos tivarim lies uksiv hasam lo tisimun alav neshach. The pasuk says you shall not put interest upon him. Malahalon mamon, just like sima by interest refers to money. Afkan mamon sotu v'sam la alilas tvarim refers to what? That I hired witnesses to lie about this woman. Anra nachem ra yitzhak v'chintani rabbi Yosef tzidoni bei rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Asya Sima Sima. So also we have another opinion that backs up this same idea, Mikzir Sheva of Sima Sima, and that teaches us, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, that in order to be chayav for Motzi Shemra, husband has to actually go ahead and hire the witnesses. By Rabbi Yirmiyah says, Sachar Bekar Kamahu. Supposed to listen to this. Let's say I hire the witnesses. I'm the husband, I hired the witnesses, but I didn't hire them with money. I hired them with property. I paid them in real property, in land. Or Bepachos Mishaver Pruta. Or I paid them with less than a pruta. So mahu, what's the halacha? Or shnehem bepruta. Or I hired both of them with one pruta. So we'll say again, in all of these cases, mahu, what's the halacha? In other words, in all of these cases, does sima mean that it has to be actual money? Or does sima mean that there must be some level of financial consideration? Whether that consideration is in the form of real estate, whether that consideration is even less than a shavar pruta, as long as it's something, that's what Rabbi Yehuda is talking about. Furthermore, another kasha, by Rav Ashi, hotzi shimra al nisuin harishon in mahu. This is actually very interesting. Let's say a man marries a woman, he divorces her, she doesn't remarry anyone else, so he remarries her. Now, second marriage to the same man, and then what happens? After they get married the second time, he says, oh, and by the way, when we were married the first time, you were not a besula. So he's motzi shemra now after he remarried her the second time. What's the halacha? So the Gemara says, last question. Furthermore, on the sui achiv mahu, he will say, let's say a man does yibum. And after he does yibum, he brings witnesses to say that his wife, his present wife, was not a basula when she married his brother. So what's the halacha about saying all of these cases? So the Gemara says, you know what? I don't know, but I could tell you, Pashat miyachada. I can at least answer one of these cases. The Tani Rabbi Yonah, es biti nasati le'isha zeh. By the case of Motzi Shemra, when the father defends his daughter, the father says, I gave my daughter to this man, so la'zeh v'lo li'yavam. So we'll say, what does it say? It says, for the Gemara understands, this comes to exclude what case? Or I should say, it only refers to a case of where the father married off the girl to this man, but excludes a case of Yibum. In other words, Rabbi say that halacha l'maisa, the Yavam could never have a claim that she was not a Besula at the time that she married his brother. So though the Gemara just has five different kashas, the Gemara doesn't answer. The Gemara leaves them open for now, but answers at least the Yibum case. So there, the Yavam has no claim of Besula. So the Gemara says, my Rabbanu, my Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So let's remember again, 2 days ago, actually yesterday, we quoted the machlokes in the Rabbanan and Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara says, what is the nature of this machlok? Is Tisanyo, Ketzad Hotzas Shemra, what is the process of Motzi Shemra? Ba'le Beis Din Va'amar Ploni, L'matzas L'bit Chabsulim. So what happens? That show up in Beis Din, man shows up in Beis Din and says, Ploni, so-and-so, I married your daughter, and I did not find that she was a Besula. Im Yesh Edim Shezin Satachtov, if there are witnesses that she committed adultery while she was in Arusa, Yesh La Ksuva Mana, she gets a Ksuva of 100 Zuz. Where says, what? Im Yesh Edim Shezin Satachtov, Yesh La Ksuva Mana, Baskilihi. What are you talking about? If she, there are witnesses that she committed adultery while she was in Arusa, forget about Ksuva, she's a Baskila, she's executed. Hachikam, that's what it means to say. Im Yesh Edim Shezin Satachtov, Biskila. If there are witnesses that she committed adultery while she was in Arusa, so she is punished with skila, zinsa meikara yeshla ksuva mana. But if ultimately she went ahead and she committed znus meikara from the beginning, meaning we'll say from the beginning means before she was in Arusa, so that's certainly not good, but one is not chayiv misa for that, right? If a woman goes ahead and engages in a relationship prior to being married, prior to Erusin, certainly, again, not good, but no death penalty, then yesh la ksuva mana. Now, this is interesting. Then she only has a ksuva mana. Now, remember we had this discussion a couple of weeks ago about if a man marries a woman under the assumption that she's a basula, and then it turns out that she's not a basula, so what is the status of that marriage? So there's an opinion that says that it's a mekachtos, right? That it's a mekachtos, that it's a mistaken transaction, and therefore, again, it's a voidable marriage. But lamaisa, again, this opinion clearly holds that is not the case. So aloch lamaisa, again, the marriage stands, but she only has a ksuva as if she was a ba'ula, as if she's not a basula, only 100. Yesh la ksuva mana. Nimtza shishemra eno shemra. Let's say it turns out that the husband was lying. She was a basula. Then what's the halacha? Lo kevanosin mea sela. Then what's the halacha? He gets malchus for lying. And he has to pay 100 sela. Bein ba'al ubein lo ba'al. Whether he had relations with her or didn't have relations with her, yes, he gets malchus, and he has to pay the money. This is the opinion of the Rabbanon. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, lo ne'emru dvaram halalu ela kishabal. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, no, the entire process of motzi shemra only occurs when, I should say, the punishments of motzi shemra only apply when, for the husband, only apply if there were relations. If he didn't have relations with her, then it turns out that he was lying. There's no malchus, and there's no 100 sela. Bishlam Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, hainu dechsev uba aleha, the ekrav eleha. So according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that there has to be bia in order to initiate the motzi shemra process, it makes sense because the pasuk says that he will come unto her, and he will come close to her, which seems to connote marital intimacy. El Rabbanan, my uba eleha v'ekrav eleha. But according to the Rabbanan, Bosei would say that you could have a case of motzi shemra even when there was no bia. So what do they do with these phrases of uba eleha v'ekrav eleha? So the Gemara says, uba eleha ba'alilos. When he came onto her, that means with lies, ba'alilos, with claims. V'ekrav eleha, and ultimately again he came closer, b'dvarim, with words. So those refer to the fact that he's developing a claim against her. Bishlam of the Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, hainu dechsev, lo matzasi lebitcha besula. So according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who says that there has to be bia. So the pasuk that says, that the husband says, I did not find that your daughter was a besula, makes sense. How didn't I find that your daughter was a besula? Because there were relations. That makes sense. El Rabbanan, my lo matzasi lebitcha besula. But according to the Rabbanan, what does it mean when it says, I did not find besulim for your daughter? Lo matzasi lebitcha kashrei besulim. I did not find for your daughter anyone that would uphold the basulim. Well, so in other words, like this. What's the case over here? The case over here is that there are witnesses that are coming forward and are saying that she was not a basula. Now, according to the Rabbanan, who say that there doesn't have to be bia, so how would that claim be countered? By making that first set of witnesses zomimin. So according to the Rabbanon, lo matzasi lebitcha basula means I did not find Edim who would be able to refute the testimony of the set of Edim who are in front of us now. Bishlon Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, hainu dechsev ve'elo basula biti. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that the father in support of his daughter says, these are the basulim of my daughter, which normally refers to the fact that he's producing a sheet with virginal blood on it. El Rabbanon, my ve'elo basula biti. But according to Rabbanon, what does it mean when it says, these are the basulim of my daughter? Ve'elo kashrei basula biti. These are the witnesses that will uphold the basula status of my daughter. Listen, now remember, you can't testify that somebody is a basula. The only thing you could testify to is if witnesses show up and say, she is not a basula because we saw her engage in bia with Reuven on so-and-so date, and then another set of witnesses come along and say, no way. I don't know what she is, what she's not, but you can't testify about that act. Why? Imanu Hayisim, you were with us on that date. The Rebbe say, now once you disqualify that set of witnesses, by definition, every woman has a chazaka that she's a basula. So once you discount the set of witnesses that came to testify, then by definition, you restore her basula status. Bishlam Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, hainu dechsevu parsu asimla. So according to Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, it makes sense when it says that they spread out the sheet. That's a reference to the sheet on which the first act of relations occurred. And they show that there's blood, and therefore that's a din. That's the right that she's a basula. El Rabbanan mai upersu asimla. But according to Rabbanan, what does it mean that they spread out the sheet? I'm Rabbi Avo. Persu ma shesam la. They go ahead and literally they spread out that which has been leveled against her. What that means is that they lay out the claim. They lay out the claim in order to disprove it. Kidisanya upersu asimla. What does it mean that ultimately they go ahead and they spread upersu asimla? They spread out the sheet. Malamid shebain edim shalza ve'edim shalza. What it means is they put everything on the table. This set of witnesses, the next set of witnesses, and they duke it out, right? And they establish who is correct, and they make it as clean and as clear as a brand new garment. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Dvarim Kich Savon, Simla Mamish. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov on the other hand says, no, it means Kich Savon as it's written, that literally they produced the sheet upon which the first act of relations occurred. Shalach Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yaakov Bar Giura Mishvit Rabbi Yochanan, Afagav Shalomatsina Bechala Torah Kula Shechala Kakosav Ben Bia Kedaka Libia Shalokidaka. Listen, I hear something very interesting. So Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Yaakov said the following, neighbor Rabbi Yochanan. Even though normally in the Torah we don't make a chilik between Bia Kedaka and Bia Shalokidaka, I mean, Rabbi saying that based on the pasuk of Mishkavei Isha, that the Torah recognizes that there are two different valid forms of relations with a woman. So Bia Kedaka, Bia Shalokidaka. So normally we don't make a distinction. However, the Gemara says, so again, remember, for both receiving lashes as well as for punishment, so a prohibited bia covers bia kedarka and bia shalokedarka, ava motzi shemra chalak. But by motzi shemra there is a chilik. Because eno chayiv ad sheyivol shalokedarka, v'yotzi shemra kedark. Because there wasn't, now this reads a little bit strange. It sounds like you're only chayiv for motzi shemra if the husband had bia shelo kedarka with his wife. Of course, that can't be what it means. So Rashi understands what it means is that even if the only bia that the husband had with his wife was bia shelo kedarka, he still can go ahead and claim that she was not a basula based on a bia kedarka that she had during erusin. On the other hand, the Gemara says, "Enu chayv ashivok shlo kedarka, v'yotziv shem ra kedarka." Kiman, whose opinion does this reflect? Ik Rabbanan, if you want to say it's like the Rabbanan, af agav delo ba'al. Remember that can't, because the Rabbanan say that you could be motzi shemra even if what, even if there was no bia at all. And ik Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and if you like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, then idi v'idi kedarka. Then Rabbi say, remember, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov requires that the husband know, or the husband make the claim that she is not a besula. Why? Based on first-hand factual knowledge, which would require bia kedarka, right? Bia kedarka, that now witnesses afterwards to bolster his claim. But he has to be able to say, lo matzasi lebitcha b'sulim, do you know why? Because I had relations with her. Obviously, he could only go ahead and make that claim if it was bia kedarka. Ela shalach rav kahana mishmeid rabbi yochanan, eno chayiv ad sheyivol kedarka, v'yotzi shemra b'kedarka. Rather, Rabbi said the halacha is that a man could only make the claim of motzi shemra if, number one, he had bia kedarka with her, and that he's claiming that she had bia kedarka during erusin as well. Meaning, a claim that she had bia shelo kedarka does not fall into the realm of motzi shemra, which makes sense, because the whole claim of motzi shemra is lo matzasi lebitcha besulim. I did not find that she was a besula. That claim obviously only applies through bia kedarka. Therefore, again, he has to have bia kedarka with her after they're married, and he has to claim that she must have had bia kedarka prior or during erusin as well, in order to go ahead and make the claim of motzi shemra. Says the Mishnah, Ha'av zakai bebito b'kidusha b'kesef u'b'shtar, excuse me, b'kidusha b'kesef b'shtar u'b'biyah. So we'll say a father is entitled to the kiddushin of his daughter. Now Rashi points out that this is referring over here to a ketana or a nara. So father is entitled to the kiddushin of his daughter, whether she's a minor or she's a nara. Whether that kiddushin takes place b'kesef, money, which in Rosh, in that case, we mean the father would get the kesef kiddushin. Shtar would be the one that he's the one who signs on the shtar, he's the one who transacts the shtar. And bia means that he has the ability to give her over to a man for bia. Zakai b'mitziyasa. Furthermore, again, a father is entitled to whatever his minor daughter finds. Ubema'aseyadah, and he's entitled to any of her earnings. Her earnings belong to him as well. Uba'afaras nedarel, and he has the right to annul her vows. Umekabel eskita, and in the event that her husband divorces Rabbi Yosef while she is still a ketana or a nara, the father has the ability to accept the get on her behalf. However, ve'ino ochel peros bechaya. Rabbi Yosef, interestingly enough, he does not have the right to eat the peros of her property during her lifetime. Rabbi Yosef, now where would a girl have property from? Let's say, again, she inherited property from her mother. Let's say from her mother's side. So we'll say here, I'll give you the simple case. Let's say her mother predeceased her father. Mother predeceased the father. And I should say differently. The mother predeceased her father. Okay? So mother predeceased her father. Then what happens? Grandfather dies. And let's assume that granddaughter is the only surviving relative. There's no other relative. So therefore, granddaughter will inherit the property of her grandfather. Technically speaking, the father, I know this is confusing, I'm sorry. Reuven marries Leah, and they have a daughter. Okay? Leah has a father, Yaakov. Leah dies before Yaakov. Then Yaakov dies. Remember, if Yaakov died first, Leah would inherit, and once Leah inherits, so then ultimately when Leah dies, her husband Reuven inherits. Here in this case over here, Leah dies first, then Leah's father Yaakov dies. The sole inheritor is Leah's daughter. We'll call her Rachel. Leah's daughter Rachel. So what happens? Rachel inherits all of the property from her grandfather. So what the Mishnah is saying over here is, her father, Rachel's father, Reuven, does not have a right to usage or peros of that land. In fact, again, the Gemara explains that what he's obligated to do is essentially put that property in what's called, the Gemara, Rashi actually calls it, Sgula. Essentially what it means is he puts in a trust. He's got to put in a trust that it's there for her when she reaches the age of majority, when she reaches adulthood. Furthermore, the Mishnah goes on, Yeser alav abal, a husband has an additional advantage or additional right over the father, she'ochal peros bechaya, that if I marry a woman and she has property, I, as the husband, do have the right to enjoy the fruits of that property. V'chayev b'mezono seha, and ultimately, again, a husband is obligated to sustain, to support his wife. Obe pirkuna, and we'll say it's an important thing to know, you're obligated to redeem your wife. If she is taken captive, you do have to redeem her. That is the halacha. Pirkuna, and we'll say, we'll discuss it, all kidding aside, this is an important halachic obligation that is actually part of the ksuva, as we'll see. Ukvurasa. And chas v'shalom, if a wife predeceases a husband, so he is obligated to go ahead and bury her. Now we will see, this is true even if he dies after her. The halacha is that part of the tnai kesuva is that he's obligated to provide for her burial. Rabbi Yehuda says, af ani shivison, and once you speak about the obligation to bury, it's not just any kind of burial, it has to be a bakavadik burial. What's the definition of a bakavadik burial? Afilu ani shebi Yisrael lo yifchos mishnei chalilin umekonenes. Even a poor man in Eretz Yisrael for kavod ames should never have less than two flutes and a mekonenes. We'll say mekonenes is a professional wailer. Not W-H-A, but rather, again, W-A-I, right? So a professional, there were these women who were like professional mourners, and their job would be, like, essentially, you're both saying, you'd give them like a little bit of information about the deceased, and they would compose these heartfelt, you know, dirges that they would go at, and they would cry, and they would this, and their job was to move the people to go ahead and feel the loss. The Rebbe said the flutes is fascinating because the truth is the concept for us of music by a funeral is far. I've seen this. I saw this once in my life. I was once at, fortunately, a funeral in Hebron, and I saw this where there was. I never saw it before, but it's interesting. But there are times of the Gemara they had this concept of chalilin, of flutes. So it's by definition basic kavod ames required that you have at least two flute players and a professional wailer, a woman who's mekonenes, who is, it's probably a better word for wailing, but no, mekonen means like wailing. Yes. Son, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the flute part.
Yeah.
The flute part. Good. Good. So says the Gemara, Bekesef Milan, and Rabbi say, now here's what's interesting. Now remember again, let's go back. The Gemara is going to go through each of these cases. And we said that halacha lemaisa, a father is entitled to the Kesef Kiddushin of his daughter. So the Gemara says, where do we know that from? That a father, and Rabbi, again, to be clear, this is only talking about a Kitana and the Nara, obviously not talking about a Bogeris. So where do we know that from? Amrav Yudom Akra, the Pasuk says, V'yatzachinam ein Kesef. Well, saying, interestingly enough, the Pasuk says that she will go free in custody. And saying, this is talking about the case of Amo HaIvria. If a father sells his daughter off as a servant, so the halacha is that when, if he doesn't marry her off to his son, and if at the end of the day, she doesn't buy herself out, when she becomes a bogeres, an adult woman, she goes free. V'yatzachinam ein kasef. Ein kasef la'adon zeh. We dashed in, there's no money to this master. V'yesh kasef la'adon acher. But we infer from here that what? There is money that would go to another master. Who is the other master who does receive money? Umanu aviha. It refers to her father. And the money that we refer to is what Rabbi say is kasef kiddushin. The father gets her kasef kiddushin when she gets married. I ve'ima ledida. But say that the money goes to the girl herself. How do you know that the money goes to the father, Kesef Kiddushin? Maybe the girl gets to keep her own Kesef Kiddushin. Hashta avia mekabel kiddusheha. Now that we know that the father is able to be mekabel kiddushin on her behalf, as well say, once we know that the father is able to affect kiddushin on her behalf, t'chsiv, as biti nasati le'ish hazeh, Ihi shakla kaspa. We'll say if the father is one who's able to affect the kiddushin, does it make sense that the father affects the kiddushin, but she keeps the money? If the father is one who affects the kiddushin, bepashtos what? He is the one who gets to keep the money as well. The ima hani mili ketana the less liyad. Perhaps say that when does the father get to keep the money? That's if the girl's a ketana who doesn't have proper kinyan yet. Avanara. The isleyad ihi tikdash nafsha the ihi tishkal kaspa. But with an Arab, we'll say who does have a kinyan yet, she does have the ability to acquire. Perhaps she should be only way she should get married is if she is makabel kiddushin for herself, and therefore she should also get to keep the money. Amakra. Therefore, the pasuk says benu areha beis abihio. The pasuk says when she is a nara, literally in her narus, she is in her father's home. Yedashin from that. Kol shevach neurim la'aviha. Literally, any of the profit of her na'ara days, which also includes her kitana days, ultimately goes to her father. So we'll say, now we've effectively proven that lemaisa, father gets to keep kesef kiddushin from a two-pronged drasha. Number one, v'yatzachinam ein kasef, by the Amma Avriya, she goes out, and her adon has no money. We infer from there, that adon has no money, but there's another adon who does have money. Who does that refer to? Her father. Her father, and therefore, since the pasuk says benu arebe savia, while she is a na'ara, anything that is generated ultimately goes to the father. Therefore, because the father has the right to marry her off, therefore he also gets the kesek kiddushin. But yet, Rav Huna said the name of Rav something different. From where do we know that anything that the girl, a minor daughter, either ketana or na'ara, generates, any earnings go to her father? Because the pasuk says, v'chiyimkar ish es bito la'amo. So the pasuk says that a man has the ability to sell his minor daughter as a maidservant. Ma'ama ma'asya de'al rabo, just like a maidservant, her earnings go to her master. Af bas ma'asya de'al la'aviha, so to a daughter, her earnings go to her father. So the Gemara says, lamali, so I don't understand, why do you need this drasha? Teipuk le'mi benu areha be'saviha. Why don't you learn from what we just said above, that when she is a Nara, the Torah says she's in her father's home, which means anything she generates, by definition, becomes the property of the father. Why do you need this additional drasha? One second, you have to be honest. Because that pasuk of Benu Areha Be'savi is referring to what? Nidarim. It's referring to the ability to annul vows, and it's telling you that while she is a Nara, she is still considered to be in her father's domain, and the father therefore has the Torah right of annulment. Or maybe you'll say, well, why don't you learn that from the Darim? Why don't you say, the same way that Lamaisa, the father, has the ability to annul her vows, he's also entitled to all of her earnings, including Kesef Kiddushin, to which the Gemara says, Mamona me Isur lo yafina. No, because you will say, you can't learn out Mamon from Isur. A neder is Isser, it deals with prohibited items. Mamon is a separate category. So just because you could say that she's in his, and she, the daughter is in her, the reshus of the father for Isser purposes, would not automatically mean that she is in the reshus of the father for mamon purposes. I have the chitem and elif miknasa. So maybe learn that from knas. The same way Rabbo said that if there is a knas case, right? If there are penalties that are paid to the daughter, ultimately it goes to the father. Rabbo said, remember, whether that's pitui or whether that's mefata or other types of knasos, if since that goes to the father, say that therefore mamon and therefore kesef kiddushin also goes to the father. To which the Gemara answers, mamona miknasa lo yafina. No, Rabbo said, knas and mamon are also two different things, and you cannot out knas from mamon. V'chitim on elif mi boshes upigam. Maybe you should say that the same way that Rabbo say, if she suffers an injury, and boshes and pigam, humiliation and depreciation go to the father, so to any other monetary item should go to the father as well. Shiny boshes upigam da'aviyan amishayech ba. But rather, the boshes upigam is different. Why Rabbo say? Because boshes upigam represent a loss for the father as well. Because again, if the daughter is humiliated, the father is humiliated. There's humiliation for the father. And pigam, which ultimately means depreciation, impacts the father financially as well. Because now perhaps when he tries to marry her off, her value, quote-unquote, will be compromised. Rather, Gemara says, Ela mistabra, dechima ma'it rachmoni yitzia, dechavas kama ma'it. Therefore, I will say again, when the pasuk says, v'yotza chinam ein kosef, that when the Amma Ivriya goes out, there's no money, but there's another case of where a girl goes out, so to speak, and there is money, that must refer to a similar case. And what is that case? So therefore, again, the Gemara says, it must refer to a case where a girl goes out of her father's domain to get married, that in that case, what? The father does get the Kesef Kiddushin. But the Gemara says, but those cases are not comparable. The leaving of an Amma Ivriya from her master's domain and the leaving of a girl from her father's home to get married are not comparable. Why? Hasam gabi adon nafkale mirushusi legamre. But Rabbi says, when a girl leaves the domain of her master, she totally leaves. Right? There is no connection between the girl and the master. But however, yitzia ahav da'av akati mechsra misri l'chupa. But Rabbi says, but when a girl, let's say, becomes betrothed irisin, so kiddushin, so even though she leaves the domain of the father, that is not a complete leaving of the paternal domain. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because there's still the chuppah, there's still nisuin. And lemaisa, again, remember, she's still living often in her father's home. So she hasn't totally left. So let's remember, where the Gemara is holding right now is, the Gemara wants to go back and say that the Ikar Drasha that teaches us that a father gets the Kesef Kiddushin of his daughter is the Yatsa Chinam Ein Kasef. That ultimately what? She will go ahead and she will go out. She'll go out without charge from her father's home, from the Adon's home. Ein kasef. There is no money, which we infer from that what? That there are other cases where there will be money. We're trying to say that means when her father marries her off, he gets the kesef kiddushin. But the Gemara says, how can you compare those two cases? When an Amma Ivriya leaves her Adon's home, there's a total departure. But yet when she leaves her father's home, that is not a total departure, because Lamaisa, again, she is still in his Rishon. Because she's living in his home, there's still a chuppah required. To which the Gemara says, "Miha, however, may afaras the dara miya nafka." But Rabbi says, "No. When it comes at least to annulment of vows, she did totally leave his home. When it comes to afaras nadaram, ultimately she is considered to be removed from his rishus tisnan naara hameurasa." That ultimately, again, a nara amurasa betrothed maiden, it is her father and her husband who both are needed to annul her vows. Therefore, what do you see from here? That lemaisa, again, she is removed from the rishus of her father for the sake of annulment of vows. Therefore, that's enough to remove her from his rishus, and that's enough ultimately to compare it to Amma Ivriya. But it's an opposite comparison, that an Amma Ivriya ain't kasef. But in the case of a girl, ultimately, again, who is leaving her father's rishus because of irisin, yesh kasef, that kesef goes to, the kesef ultimately goes to her father. Well, say, let's just do one more. Shtarubia, and yet again, a father is able to transact the shtar for his daughter's kiddushin, and is able to give her over in bia for kiddushin. Minalan, where do we know the father has these, right? Amakra, v'haisali ish achar, that she will be to another man. Iskish havios ladadi. All the different forms of kiddushin are compared to each other, and therefore, once we establish his rights in kesef kiddushin, that also establishes his rights to what? To avet kiddushin for his daughter through shtar, and to ultimately give his daughter over for bia as well. All right, Rabbi Sayyid Shikoyach.